You're listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of July 3rd, 2013, and we're talking about the scripted of us, or the linear of us, or the last of us. That's one of those three.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast, and my name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless discussion about video games. And if there's one video game everyone is playing right now,
it's Farmville. Animal Crossing.
God damn it.
You know, oddly enough, we both named farming games.
We did. One game that talks about farming, but has no in-game farming mechanic, much to my disappointment, and George's, I'm sure.
That was sad.
Is The Last of Us by Naughty Dog. Recently released, probably, I don't know, one of the most anticipated games of the entire year.
Oh, easy, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have been, gosh, it must have made the debut, what, last E3 2012?
Yeah, there's been a few trailers, but I remember the first trailer that came up, as well as the first gameplay trailer. It, like, you know, everyone went on the internets and were buzzed that, oh my god, Ellen Page is in this game.
Yeah.
She's not in this game, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so, hold on, this is just me being dumb, but, like, so, she's not in this game, right?
Yes, Ellen Page is not in this game.
But why, how did that start? Like, because that seems like everyone thinks she is.
I think it's because the character looks a little bit like her. I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe that they were initially shaping Ellie to be similar to her, like, in look. I think they maybe were even hoping of casting her.
Okay. And how does this relate to Beyond Two Souls?
It doesn't. It doesn't. Okay. The only reason that's actually the internet is abuzz now is because Ellen Page did an AMA on Reddit, which is an Ask Me Anything for the non-Redditors out there. And someone asked her what she thought about the appearance of Ellie in The Last of Us, and, you know, she hadn't heard about it, but then she did some research, and she was apparently mildly irritated on the internet, and of course everyone flipped their shit.
Ooh, I didn't even know that drama. Well, come to experiencepoints.net, your home for celebrity gossip.
I mean, I don't think Ellie looks that much like Ellen Page, right?
I mean, no, I think people are just being kind of weird about, like, young internet, young Hollywood celebrities all kind of looking the same, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, we're here to talk about video games.
So, the important stuff.
Yes. What we generally do for folks that have not listened to the podcast before is when we talk about a single game in depth, we will do a mechanical section first where we mainly focus on the systems of play, and then we'll give a big fat warning in case you're worried about narrative spoilers, and then we'll dive into the plot and, you know, expound on some of those themes.
Yep.
So, let's start it off then. The Last of Us as a video game. Where best to start? This is Naughty Dog.
So we should start with that, right? Like, there's certain assumptions about the way that Naughty Dog games play out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hence the beginning joke about the linear of us, right? They get a lot of flack for making games that are heavily scripted, but create this illusion of not being scripted.
Yeah.
So I think that's the sort of baggage everyone carries when they go into something like The Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
For those who are really into the Drake series and Uncharted series, it's not that big of a deal. For people who felt like it rubs them the wrong way when games are overly scripted, then, you know, they probably went into The Last of Us with a little bit of trepidation.
Yeah. Agreed.
How much do you think that actually models the Last of Us versus, say, something like Uncharted?
I was thinking about this a lot because I feel like there are far fewer bombastic set pieces in The Last of Us. Like, you're not, you know, just think
you're
about
not
all
a,
the,
you're not in a blimp. Cruise ship.
Yeah. You know, you're not flying out of the end of an airplane. You're not falling
not
out
Indiana
of a burning
Jones.
Building. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are, you know, the environments themselves are less dynamic in that there's not as many scripted destructions of them. Mm-hmm. But every environment you are in is still just exquisitely set up for the specific purpose of the game.
Yes. It is very intentionally crafted in that way.
I mean, this is just kind of a side note on this, but just walking through this game, you know, imagining how long it took to dress all of the sets, you know, putting every individual broken chair and, you know, making sure that the vegetation is growing in the correct direction up the wall. Like, it's
dishes in the kitchen and posters on the streets.
It's just amazing just to think about how many people and how long that took, you know?
Yeah. It's a gorgeous game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I feel kind of dumb saying the obvious, but I mean, it's really is one of the best, you know, visual spectacles I've ever seen in a video game.
Yeah, and definitely on the PS3. But there's something about the post-apocalyptic atmosphere that lends itself well to that sense of clutter, but also, like, growth. The vines climbing over everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the world feels halfway transformed.
Yep.
Which is exactly as it should feel.
Yeah. It's just so impressive. They're just so impressive from an artistic perspective. It's, you know, very few people are in that same league. Very few studios are in that same league, I should say.
Yeah, definitely. But back to the actual gameplay of it.
Back to the actual gameplay of it. So I am quite a renowned Uncharted naysayer.
You are.
I'm just not a big fan of how that game moves and how it, and just the way that it approaches combat, generally, which is funny because I really like the Uncharted multiplayer. I think it's actually the single player that I don't really like all that much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I feel like from a mechanical perspective and from a systemic perspective, I think this game's actually pretty bad.
Yeah. It's so funny. I like The Last of Us a lot, I should say. But, I don't think it's great mechanics. I'll come to the defense of it, and there are a lot of cool things that it does, but it gets pretty boring pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about this a lot, and just the paradigm of big, you know, quote-unquote AAA games. You know, this game, I took a look. It took me 14 and a half hours to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this game would have been way more enjoyable for me if it was two-thirds of that length, or a third of it even. Like, 5 hours would have been just fine, you know?
Yep, yep.
Because at a certain point, you're just, you know, you're fighting the same people over and over again. I whether this was a good idea for them to do or not, they included a lot of stat tracking in it. And I took a look. I killed 503 people.
Yeah. Wow, we were remarkably close in kills.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, and I think that's not, I don't think that's a mistake, or I don't think that's a coincidence.
Because they're people that are in your way that you sort of have to kill, you're suggesting.
Right. And I mean, I think the big point of this game is that, and what got us so excited during the E3 trailer was that it looked like every encounter was going to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think it means all that much because you're doing the same thing over and over again. And the danger, you know, the weight of taking a life diminishes every time you kind of do the same deal, you know?
Yeah. There's certain scenes in particular where just the, like, you're going through a city, for example, or a small town, and just the width of that town is so large.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even just cutting that in half would be a relaxing moment. And you know that, look, most of this game, all of the exciting narrative beats, they never happen, or they rather, I should say, they rarely happen in the heat of action.
Yeah.
They might happen when you're poking around, you know, and you are deciding where you want to go, and they might happen in scripted cutscenes and whatnot, but
mm-hmm.
it's pretty rare that something really impactful occurs while you're wielding a weapon.
Yeah.
And I think the moment for me that really punctuated that was at one point you find a flamethrower.
Mm-hmm.
And just the ridiculousness of that. Like,
yeah.
I don't need a flamethrower. I don't need to unlock another weapon. Like, there's nothing. And, you know, to some extent, I don't even think the fighting mechanics are supposed to be that interesting or compelling in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Scarcity plays such a role in this game, and you're always surviving on a few bullets or a few canisters of alcohol to make a Molotov or something, right? Like, for the most part, I'm trying to be really judicious with what I build and when I build it and how I use my ammunition.
Yep.
Because when you run out of it, you're hosed and you have to finish the job with melee, right?
Yep.
And for the most part, that scarcity works. I think it lends itself well to some really cool moments.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're not limited by that scarcity, when it moves away from survival horror to action shooter, that's when it really starts to be like, oh yeah, this just isn't very compelling.
Yep.
And when you get that flamethrower, it's just like icing on the cake. I'm like, hey, here's another potentially cool weapon, but now we're not going to give you very many canisters, and it's going to be kind of overpowered, and it's not going to be very fun to use, and it's just a shame.
Yeah, and you know, when that stuff breaks down, when the stealth breaks down, you realize it's, oh, this feels a lot like Uncharted. The enemies are really spongy. There's, you know, it's interesting because they do, there are a lot of contrived mechanics that influence your battle behavior in this game.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you run at an enemy, you will almost always take damage no matter what.
Yep.
And if you run away from an enemy, you are far less likely to take damage. So, like, it's right. not a constant, you know, the hit detection is not constant based on your action. It is contextual based on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting idea, but the problem that I had with it is that it didn't work for me. Like, when enemies run at you, they have this weird little juke move that they can kind of dash to the side really quick. And I just am terrible at video games, but, like, you know, it was a lot harder for me to aim at them and get a few hits directly when they were charging directly at me than it was for them to do it to me.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, they're far more lethal running at you than the other way around.
Yeah, and I mean, it's...
Unless you have a shotgun.
Or right, unless you have that shotgun. It's like, okay, well, that makes sense because it's a shotgun, but, you know, it's... And it's not that that is a bad concept. Like, you remember, like, when we were playing Tomb Raider, it's like we even read that thing where the developers were like, yeah, we purposefully made you take more damage when you were jumping so people would have to roll more
right.
often.
Right. It's an attempt to shape your behavior towards running away from combat as opposed to, you know, going yeah. balls out into it.
It's interesting. I just didn't, you know, I just didn't appreciate it because it felt uneven as to what the enemies were incentivized to do. The other thing, and this is an inherited problem from Uncharted, is that the animations are so long and there's no way to break out of them that you can basically die when you're trying to strangle somebody because someone else is shooting at you.
Yeah, I think that's actually the most difficult thing in regards to stealth. I generally like the moments. Like, for me, the highlights in terms of combat were sneaking around, killing maybe a third of the enemies in any given room,
yeah.
messing up, being spotted, having to shoot some, panic, throw a Molotov, run away, hide again, and either just pass the rest or kill the rest
yep.
using stealth again. Like yeah. when that works, it feels really good. The yeah. problem is, like you said, some of the animations are just so very long
yeah.
that there are moments when it does create a lot of tension,
mm-hmm.
but there are other moments where they spot you and they just start firing at you and there's not really anything you can do, and it doesn't always feel like they... Not that they want you to be stealthy, because I do think the systems are such that the behavior definitely lends itself well towards stealth.
Yeah.
The problem is, I think, it's that borderline between moving from stealth into action that's just not very well done. It's not easy to move from one to the other.
Right. You're right. You're completely correct. Like, it's not graceful. And, you know, I just don't know if it would have broken the game if you were able to, you know, let's say you're in the middle of strangling someone out, you're in the middle of choking them out, but then you know that there's a bunch of guys around you. Would it have been game-breaking if you were to, you know, release a button and then you don't kill that person, but you can at least stop the animation and get away, you know?
Yeah, or you know, you have a shiv in combat, and when you first grab someone, you can decide to shiv them right off the bat.
Right.
If instead you choose to choke them out, the prompt to shiv them doesn't come back.
Yeah.
Right. Even something simple like that, where you can hit your panic button and then stab him. And yeah. I get it. And it makes for these really cool animations and a few moments where Joel's just barely scraping by and he barely takes someone out. Yeah. And that can be neat. But the transition just doesn't feel very well. And I think the same thing goes for when you're just holding them hostage. Right.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of struggling, but you're really kind of slow and you have to use the handgun and your aim's not great. And
mm-hmm.
it's not, you know, it doesn't feel like you're empowered to move from one type of combat to another.
Yeah, it was, it's definitely something where, you know, partially it's my expectations, because when I started, so for example, I think this game is a lot more lenient in terms of enemy cooldown time than most other stealth games are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you get caught and then you just sprint away somewhere and start hiding, I feel like the enemies aren't as thorough as something like, you know, Metal Gear Solid or Dishonored.
Definitely.
Or something.
They lose track. They're like, oh man, he's gone. He's clearly behind the bookshelf, Bob.
Right. Yeah. It's like, well, I won't look in here because who cares? You know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, like that's quite different from a lot of stealth games and that, but you know, we've been so conditioned to think of enemies acting in a certain way that it is somewhat of a jarring transition.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the other thing is that, you know, the other stealth elements, we're living in this golden age of stealth, especially with games like Mark of the Ninja and Dishonored, where mm-hmm. it becomes quite apparent when other designers haven't really paid enough attention to what went on in those
what
games.
What we've learned.
Yeah. Well, let's just do it this way. How'd you feel about the stealth? Like, what were your favorite parts and least favorite parts of the stealth?
So some of my favorite parts were, I liked hiding around corners. I liked, to some extent, the use of bottles to distract people.
Yeah, I thought the distractions were really cool.
Yeah, there are some really cool moments when, you know, like, some of my favorite, and I really loved the bow and arrow, and the bow and arrow was, like, my go-to. If I had ammunition, I would always try to use it, mm-hmm. because killing someone stealthily in that way is really neat.
Yep.
And if you miss, it creates a sound distraction, which is a really cool opportunity opener mm-hmm. for doing something else, right, because you missed. So I think that stuff worked really well. I really enjoyed toying with my enemies in a way, like mm-hmm. having them come over and then circle back behind them. Or, you know, sometimes I'd be along, like, a couch or something, and right as they're coming around the corner out of frame, I jump over the couch so I can get behind them and then take them out, right? That, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff worked really well. The stuff that I didn't like is that it just, in an effort to have a really clean UI, so not have things be bogged down with a bunch of, like, doodads that remind you it's a game.
Yeah, no radar.
There's no radar. Yeah. The form of radar, the sort of, I don't know what they call it, the sort of stealth mode or whatever.
Yeah, the listen mode or whatever.
Yeah, the listen mode, while I think it's smart that they give some pros and cons to using it to mix things up, it's not really all that useful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to read, right? Like, it's very difficult to know what is the distance between, like, a clicker mm-hmm. and the range that they can hear you moving.
Yeah.
Or if I throw a glass bottle, how long are they going to be distracted? How close does it have to be for them? How far will they go when that yep. happens, right? There's just mm-hmm. not very many good ways to arm you with that knowledge. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's just sort of what we have to have, is this sort of, like, somewhat shitty stealth system mm-hmm. To convey the sense that you don't know, because you are in an apocalypse and you're not an expert at killing clickers or whatever right. you. But there are just some moments when it's just kind of a shame, because when you're trying to be stealthy, it doesn't work, or you don't know why it doesn't work.
Yep.
And again, I think for most of the time, at least the way that I played, it did work. You know what I mean? I don't think it was absolutely broken. It's just not mm-hmm. nearly as good as it could be. And so when you have such lengthy scenes of combat, it becomes a drag. You know, I found myself, every time I faced clickers, I wished I was facing humans. And every time I was facing humans, I wish I was facing clickers.
Yeah. It's whatever you got. The grass is always greener on that other side of the zombie apocalypse.
Because you'd use different strategies for each, you know, for the most part.
Yeah. It was, like you were saying, it's very noticeable that the other interesting thing is that a lot of the stealth and a lot of the cues are audio cues as well. So if someone sees you, you hear kind of an audio stinger.
Yep.
Which is, intriguing in theory, but it doesn't really give you much information as to who is seeing you and where and what their position is on the map.
Yeah.
Which is, again, like, you know, video games are primarily a visual medium. Like, the reason why Mark of the Ninja was so interesting was that it made everything visual. Like, you didn't have to have a separate piece of HUD, is because everything was in the world itself.
Yeah.
You know, like, Dishonored, the dark vision, like, had vision cones in it, and you could see people's, you know, you could see how far they could look at you. And, you know, Dishonored also had, you know, they had audio stingers as well as visual indicators around people's head about how active they were. Like, there are elegant ways of doing this that just really need to happen, or else you're going to break all of this tension when you have to do the scene 10 times in a row.
Yeah. I think one example was in stealth mode or whatever, you can see a little sort of audio radius mm-hmm. coming out of everyone in the game. So the clickers and both humans, you can sort of see a little orb coming out. It's pretty meaningless. I don't really even know why it's there, because it doesn't convey accurately what the actual range of listening is.
Yeah.
But it would have been nice if it didn't zoom in quite as much when you're Joel in that way. If mm-hmm. you could go into that stealth mode even while standing up and then just show me what his radius is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would have been relatively elegant. It would have fit in with everything else, and it would have armed me with more information about what it can and can't do in that environment.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing about the stealth, and we discussed this a little bit earlier, but, you know, because you can start seeing, or rather hearing through walls and, you know, I upgraded the listening ability to its maximum potential, I believe. You know, you can increase the range. It reveals the contrived and arbitrary points about the game of, like, where enemies spawn in from, and, like, you know, I can jump down the gating is really obvious in this game. Like, every time you jump down from a ledge, it's clear something's going to happen because it's an unclimbable ledge.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get to see, oh, wait, why couldn't I see all of those zombies down there in dark mode? They're clearly down there. Oh, well, it's because you just haven't really entered the action scene yet. And, hey, reminder, everyone, you're playing a video game. You know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Did you have, maybe, again, maybe I'm just terrible at video games, but did you, like... I feel like every single sequence I had to do at least two times.
No, that wasn't me. You just suck at video games. No, I mean, I think for the most part, I mean, there were some, here's the thing. For me, it was either do it like five times,
right,
or just get it done your first time.
Yeah.
And so maybe like a third of the times I had to do it a lot. But for the most part, yeah, it was, you know.
Yeah.
And some of it was my fault, right? I'd go in like guns blazing or something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it has some of those same elements that can be frustrating in any stealth game, where you mess up, it resets, and you're just like, ugh, I don't want to try the same thing and fail again, so I'm just going to do something completely different.
Yeah.
But then you're not really applying what you learned when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, it's not always a enriching experience when you mix things up, even though you kind of have to mix things up.
Yeah. It was a very similar Uncharted experience. Like, there's just certain scenes in Uncharted that I had to play, like, 10 times in a row, and it was very... And it just starts, that sort of thing is like, this is going to be the next great battle of the new generation, because you have this game that looks hyper realistic and, you know, it's supposed to be gritty and you're like scrapping for every little piece of paper and drop of alcohol you can. But then you're kind of doing it 10 times in a row and you realize that it's all kind of meaningless. It's the Tomb Raider problem, really.
Yeah.
Like all this gruesome death animation, but when you see it 10 times in a row, it's like, oh, I guess it's not really all that meaningful, you know?
Yeah, it's about, I think, the length of it, and
I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's too bad that, again, like, this is, like, a very video gamey video game in very strange ways. Like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense that the clickers are one-hit kills,
mm-hmm.
because the other zombies aren't one-hit kills.
Yeah.
You know, like, and also their hitboxes are really big, like, it's weird that some things will kill you in one hit, and other things, you're just fine, and it's just an arbitrary choice, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think that if you can look past that, though, there are really compelling moments in the game because of that, right? Like, clickers are terrifying.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be terrifying if they weren't one hit, but it's just, when you start looking at the layers below, well then, you know, yeah, you're going to see some of those bones, those structures.
It's kind of why I preferred, actually, the human sequences, because there was the possibility of coming back from a mistake, you know?
Yeah. 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 Definitely.
The other thing that I want to complain about, and I swear I'll stop complaining after a second, is there is a section towards the end where it's essentially a boss section.
Yes.
Where it's super video gamey. There are three segments of it. You hit the person once, you start another segment, you hit him again, starts another segment, then the third time, they're dead.
Yep.
No other person in the entire game has to be knifed three times before they're dead.
Yeah, yeah, it's really video gamey.
Yeah, it's weird. It's just the types of decisions that are made. It's like, in Naughty Dog, it really feels like there's the cinematic people on the north end of the building, the gameplay people on the south end of the building, and they don't really talk to each other.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame, too, because while I like the character to some extent narratively, I don't think we need a villain, right? We don't need a boss battle. No one was going through this game thinking, gosh, you know what we really need? It's like a mega zombie.
Yeah, that's true. Because there's like the, you know, zombie light, middle zombie, and crazy zombie.
Yeah. There's one point where you're underground in this hotel, and there's one of those mega zombies. What are they called? Bloaters.
Bloaters, yeah.
There's a bloater, and the bloater's standing, his whole pacing, all of his pathing is right by the exit to the location.
Mm-hmm.
You have to kill him to get out.
Yeah.
As far as I understand. And even if you throw like glass bottles and stuff, he'll only go slightly down the hall. He's never comes out of the hall. Except for in the beginning when like it's just absolutely mad crazy. So maybe, you know, maybe there is a way that you can get past him, whatever. But for the most part, you just sort of have to take him out.
Well, it's another readability thing. Like there are certain scenes where it was just very, very, very satisfying to... Oh man, there's a room full of dudes and or zombies over there. I'm going to sneak past it and that's fine. I just saved like 10 bullets, which is like by far the difference between life or death 10 times over.
You like celebrate. You're like, yes.
Yeah, it's like, great. I still have all my stuff. And then there's other times where you think you're going to sneak by, but actually you're in a sequence where it's a scripted sequence where you actually have to destroy at least some people to get out of it. And it's never quite clear what you're doing until you either test it or you just kill people out of habit.
Yeah, those scripted moments are, I think, for me, some of the most jarring. Because the ones that aren't scripted, for the most part, you know, they don't always work, but they worked for me maybe 2/3 of the time.
Yeah.
When it's really scripted, there's no other option.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just real disappointing.
Yeah, it's quite a fascinating game because there are certain points in the game where I feel like you're basically walking through a canyon and it's not very open. Like, you can really tell something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then there's other times where, like, the maps are as good as maps that you would play in Halo. Like, they're very interesting.
Yep.
And it's just all jammed into one game, which is, you know, it's just, you don't really see that level of variety all that often.
Yeah. I mean, there are other things I like as well, right? The idea of having Joel create objects to help him in battle,
yep,
in the heat of battle, and the time it takes to make them, I think worked really well. I thought it was really cool to just go, oh gosh, a guy's coming, I'm quickly making a Molotov, or I'm quickly making a Shiv. All that stuff I thought worked wonderfully.
And that's where you see, it seems like maybe they are paying attention to, like, current trends in gaming, because it's very much like a Dark Souls thing or a Far Cry thing where there's no real pause button. Like, if you want to do something, it still is gonna, you know, be real time in the game. And I love that stuff. I thought that was also really neat.
Yeah. And again, it makes for some neat moments when, you know, you're in the heat of battle, but you're, like, digging through drawers, desperate to find some cloth to shove into a bottle of alcohol or something.
So I wanted to ask you about this specific thing because I remembered our talk about Bioshock. Yeah. And so, but, like, during this whole game, it was so funny because I would be in a really intense firefight, and then I would just see Joel's arm, like, groping around, like, ooh, a canned thing. Better get some health, like, that sort of thing. And I was like, oh, this is George's Bioshock moment.
It is my Bioshock moment. To be fair, though, it makes more narrative sense in a world filled with scarcity that you're digging through trash.
Yeah. I mean, Columbia isn't as good to everyone, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was one of the... Columbia didn't treat me well, so I was one of the other half.
That's true. I guess so. But also, there was, like, I mean, there's most of them are empty, but there's medical supplies, at least. They're not, like, money.
Mm-hmm.
You're not like, oh, sweet, chump change.
Well, there is kind of money. I mean, that's how you upgrade your...
Oh, yeah, all the, like... All the
little gears and widgets that you use to upgrade your equipment.
That's true.
I feel it's weird because it didn't bother me in Bioshock, and it did bother me in Last of Us, and I think the reason is because I could actually see the character model. You know?
Yeah, but the character model is already so good at groping around.
It just looks, I feel like, so it's the funny. Same way.
Yeah, but seeing it makes it so much more meaningful to me.
I mean,
I have to imagine, like, I have to imagine Booker digging through trash cans
and just stuffing it in his face too, like,
nom 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 nom. Yeah, because it's like, yeah, packets of, like, ho hos and shit. Come on.
They can find ho hos in The Last of Us. Those things are good for a long time.
That's true. They're like canned peaches or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think. Overall, though, I did like this a lot more than the Uncharted gameplay, just generally.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think the gunplay was as good as Uncharted, but the entire package of the stealth and the, you know, sneaking around, it was quite refreshing.
Yeah. Cool. Well, should we talk about the narrative?
Let's talk about the narrative, because that's why I actually really like this game quite a bit.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Well, in that case, we're going to do spoilers for The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go. All right. Spoilers. So, hey, not a lot of games kill children.
In fact, I would challenge anyone to think of more than, like, three examples
of
kids dying in games, period.
And, I mean, it's nothing. Like, GTA, forget about it. Red Dead, no children. Yeah. Like, I mean, even what are considered the most controversial games.
Yeah, Fallout.
Yeah, it's, like, that just doesn't happen.
Well, and not only do you... First off, you rarely play as children.
Right.
You rarely play as female, period, let alone female child. And then playing as a female child that also dies?
Yeah. Ugh,
it's the crazy trifecta, all within the first, like, 20 minutes of the game.
Yep. Very, very... I mean, this is actually something that Naughty Dog does very well throughout the game, which is you start off the game playing as Joel's daughter in the pre-apocalypse, and, you know, they give you a sense of who the characters are, not just by the acting and not just by the good writing, but by you inhabiting them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, you have a stake in their lives because you were able to live as part of them, you know, as your avatar, and you get to play as Ellie, you get to play as Joel, like, every important core person of the entire story you get to play as, which is really, I really appreciated that.
And the ability to control what Sarah is looking at when you're driving away, it's like such a little thing, but I really appreciated it because it puts you in the shoes of a child who is like both fascinated by and deeply terrified and disturbed by what's going on. Because you're curious and you look, but when you do, you see her sort of like crouch over the furniture and look, and you're wrestling these dual purposes of, I don't want to make this child look at things because it's dark and horrifying, but at the same time, I want to know what's going on. And that same sort of mentality that the game is putting you through, I think is what's going through her head. It's what's going through like a parent's head in that situation.
And because you're the player, like, you can't do anything but look. Like, it's not like you can shoot it at anyone. Like, you're just a kid. Like, all you can do is, like, hope that your dad doesn't crash the car, you know? And and I mean, just, oh, man, that where you could turn around all the way in the seat and look back and you see zombies overrunning people as you're driving away, like...
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, it was just a really neat use of interactivity, even if it's not challenge-based interactivity.
Yeah. I really wish I had gone into this game completely cold.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do, but if I had gone into it completely cold and I didn't know that, you know, there's no blonde girl later on in the game.
Right, yeah.
If I hadn't seen that damned trailer where they get ambushed.
Yeah.
Those moments would have been incredibly more impactful than they already were. And they were impactful to me. So, you know, I think, gosh, if you could get into The Last of Us without hearing anything, it'd be quite an experience.
Turn off this podcast right now.
Stop it!
But the going back to the end where, you know, the military person prevents Joel from advancing, and then he gets the order to actually kill Joel and, you know, to keep the peace, basically. And, you know, Joel's daughter dies. And then they just hard cut, you know, 20 years into the future. And actually, no, it's not a hard cut because they give you a really elegant synopsis of what happened over those past 20 years.
Yep.
Those opening credits and the title card of, like, just kind of saying how martial law rose and, you know, the various factions, you know, it was just a very good, graceful way of introducing the bulk of the game.
Yep, absolutely.
What else? What else do we talk about? Should we just kind of go down the line list a little bit?
Yeah. Sure. Well, I want to talk a little bit. Let's just jump to some of the themes that we thought were cool.
Because
I think a lot of it a lot of the game is defined by these themes.
Yeah.
You know, you and I, we joined the Pop Matters folks to talk about The Last of Us as well. And so some of the things that maybe we won't cover as in-depth here, we'll cover over there if you're curious.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I liked a lot that you were mentioning was that that you thought that a lot of the themes of like what Joel wants out of life and what it means to sort of lead a good life in this world are mirrored in the characters that he surrounds himself with.
Yeah.
So I think, like, Tess is a really interesting character to me.
Yeah.
One listener, like, sent in a thing saying that some of their friends were saying Tess was underdeveloped.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Tess was a really interesting character because she was so underdeveloped that we got this just little tidbit of what it's like. And she set such a good tone for the rest of the game because she dies. She has all of this hope, but it's almost, you know, it's almost kind of like blind hope, desperate hope based upon a life that just kind of sucks. Clearly is not ideal.
Yeah.
So it's such a cool, like, roundabout way of talking about and dealing with things like parenthood, things like, the lack of hope and depression in this world, but as well as, like, just the desperate need, the ugly need to have hope anyway.
Yeah.
All of that I thought was captured really well by both her and by Bill and by a lot of the characters you see in the game.
And the thing about Joel and Tess is, like, you know, Tess is kind of the loose cannon of the duo, you know? Like, Joel is constantly in this reactive mode of, like, ever since losing his daughter, he just wants things to be stable, even if it's a shitty situation. Like, the evil you know is better than the evil you don't. And, you know, so, like, Tess is always kind of pushing him to do something, you know, to branch out a little bit, whether it's, like, getting involved with the local gangsters or shepherding a girl across the country. You know, you just get a sense of the dynamic of she's kind of the pusher of that relationship. You know, whatever their relationship is, you know, that's what her role is in it.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I just love how much gumption Ellie has right off the bat. Like, there's this great scene when they're running from an armored vehicle, I think in the fall, and she can't swim. Of course she can't swim because, hey, that's a game thing. But she can't swim. And he's like, they're at a bridge, and he's like, okay, we'll just find another way. And she just doesn't even hesitate. She's like, nope, this is the only way, and jumps off the bridge into the water.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And right off the bat, she's establishing a sort of, like, you know, I have agency, I'm making decisions, and you're going to have to react to that, so deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and then, you know, it's not just Hollow either, because then you have to control her at certain points in the game, and you get to see how things look from her perspective. She moves a little bit differently than Joel. Her abilities are slightly different. You know, it's not just a contrived NPC. You know, there's a real system, you know, behind that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I did like Bill a lot, you know, as they were traveling across the country. You know, Ellie is somehow immune to, you know, she's developed an immunity to the virus that is turning people into zombies, and she's one of the few people that's ever happened to. So, yep. You know, the rebellious faction, the Fireflies, is going to try to develop a vaccine, and in doing so, both save the planet and also discredit the, you know, somewhat fascist regime that's taken hold in the interim.
Right.
So anyway, so, you know, the rest of the story is just traveling down that lonely post-apocalyptic world. Yeah, like, yep. And, you know, meeting people along the way. And, you know, I liked Bill a lot, especially because of the subtle storytelling that was going on. You know, he's a guy that is just basically holed up in a town, and all he cares about is just surviving, and he's booby-trapped the town, and he has this whole intricate method of dealing with day-to-day life in this new area. He's kind of like, you know, he's someone you'd see on, you know, Doomsday Preppers or something like that.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
Yeah.
He's got booby traps and canned goods stored up.
Right, yeah. There's a couple different ways you can go with Bill, actually, that you can learn about Bill. You found the note from Bill's partner, right?
I did, yes.
Okay. And then, you know, Bill had a partner. Like, you know, it's kind of ambiguous, but if you are paying attention, it probably seems like they are romantically involved.
Yeah, and Ellie finds the what is it, Playgirl?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. She finds pornography, gay pornography, at a certain point after the fact, in case you didn't notice it.
Yeah, I like that stuff a lot, and you know, this is, I think one of the cool things about post-apocalyptic fictions is that there's so much about the sort of normative behavior that we already have.
Yeah.
So, like, either be it social, be it personal relationships, all of that stuff. So Bill's thing was really neat, because if you wanted to read that he's a gay character and he was in love with this other person and the person abandoned him, what you're getting is like, oh, there's all these social norms right today. Like, you know, California, you can get married now, but this is just a couple days old, right?
Right.
But in the post-apocalyptic world, it just doesn't really matter all that much.
Yeah.
And they say so in the car. I think she, like, throws the magazine out or something. Mm. And it's just, like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just nice, because it's there for people that want it. It's subtle. You know, Bill doesn't have a big speech. You know, it's his defining characteristic is his isolation. And that's just another facet of that isolation.
Yeah.
It was a really effective way of doing that. Yeah. And an effective way of using what are really just, like, in-game, you know, the equivalent of audio logs, but you're reading them, you know, lore, basically.
Yeah.
To learn more about the characters in a way that still makes sense, you know, even though it's, like, general lore type stuff.
And a lot of the things that you learn are really tragic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Bill's a survivor, and he's really cool, and it's inspiring, but he's alone, and that sucks. And, you know, when you leave him, you don't expect to see him again, you know? He's just sort of, now that his potential lover is dead and gone, gone because he's, because of Bill's personality and because of his solitary nature, it just sort of, it's like another depression, rather, it's another depressing note to add to an already sort of depressing game.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing comes up again when you meet the two brothers, right? Mm-hmm. And it ends very suddenly with the kid coming infected and the brother killing himself.
Yeah.
Because of his guilt.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, you know, that was actually one of the few things that I found, like, pretty obvious about the game. Like, the moment I met those two, I was like, well, nothing's good's gonna happen with that kid. And then when the kid starts talking about, oh, what do you think happens when you become infected, it's like, oh, that kid's infected.
Yeah,
just do it now, end it now before more heartbreak happens.
But one of the things I liked so much about that scene was that Ellie goes in there and the kid's counting canned goods.
Yep.
And he's immediately defensive, and he thinks that his brother sent Ellie in to chide him for not doing a good job that day. And it's just fucking heartbreaking, because you know, like, He's a kid. He's like, what, maybe he's like 10, right?
Yeah.
He's dying. He knows that he's dying. Yet yeah. He still has all of these social pressures and guilt and shame of like, I got bit and I'm a bad person for it. And I let my brother down and I have moments to live, but I'm still going to do a good job. And like, It's just fucked up.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get any better. And she gives him a toy and he's not like, oh, I'm going to play with it now with my last moments. He just drops it.
Yeah. Cause why bother? Like that's it. You know, he messed up. All that stuff is, you know, they don't pull any punches, and it also helps a lot that, you know, you can tell the actors are doing a very good job and that they're in the same room together and that the mocap people are also the voice people. And, you know, it's, if you got the money to do it, it goes a long way, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and saying, very little too. I think you pointed this out earlier, but like so much of good performances are not overwriting the performances.
Yeah, Neil Druckmann did a very good job with some of the dialogue scenes in particular.
Just so few words can convey so much if you have the correct words and the type of acting that can carry those. You know, it's just...
Well, Joel in particular, too. Like, there are certain moments when Ellie will ask a question and Joel will give a non-answer that says so much.
Yeah. And it feels legitimate, too. You know, he is a stoic Texas dude. Like, he's not going to get up on a soapbox and give this huge exposition dump, you know?
Yeah.
He'll say something like, yeah, that's hard. And like, that just says a million things, you know? Yeah.
We're like, we gotta go.
Yeah.
Something as simple as that. It's just, it's brutal. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, very, very impressive. Mm-hmm. What other characters or what other plot points should we talk about?
We
talked about the brothers, the two brothers. Yeah.
One of the things that I like a lot is that when the game first started and it jumps ahead 20 years, which is really cool itself.
Yeah.
But some of the scenes I expect, like the fall, right, after the two brothers, there's all this buildup like, oh, we got to get to this radio tower and we're going to potentially find all the survivors and then we're going to get out of here, right? Mm-hmm. And we got to get across this bridge. We're headed to this bridge. That's where we're going to go. And it has all this buildup. And then when the brother kills himself, that's it. It's done.
Yep.
It fades to black and you move ahead and it's probably months after that. Mm-hmm. Ellie and Joel have been through a bunch of other shit that we never saw. So you have to ask yourself, like, what is the point of that previous scene? It's not to build the scene where they make it to the bridge. Congratulations. They won the day. It's because there was an emotional moment. There was a narrative moment that defines their experience together, that shapes who they are. And we see it. And once we see the end of it, that's that. We don't need to carry around with them. We don't need to follow them through the next gripping action scene, right? Like we just need to see that it fucking sucks, this world sometimes.
Yeah.
And this guy killed himself and that might not even be that bad of a call.
Mm-hmm.
And you just you just move on and you have to move on and it forces you to move on. But you're still thinking about it in the very next scene. So like it does all of this really cool stuff where I think the narrative construction of the game lends itself well to the narrative experience that they might be having in that scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it goes back to that thing of not overburdening it with exposition or dialogue. Like, sometimes all you need is a hard cut to black, and that says it all. You know, you don't have to fill in every single nook and cranny.
It's just the gameplay that burdens it.
Which is, God, it's the worst. Like, I felt so bad. I was like, well, maybe if I get... I committed the cardinal sin, which is maybe if I get through this shooting sequence, there'll be another cutscene. And then I was like, wait a second, what did I just think? Like, that's terrible, you know?
Yeah.
I also liked, again, this is familial relationships, but Joel's brother and, you know, they clearly had a falling out. He joined the rebels and Joel was still kind of on it for, you know, on his own. And they address it, but they address it by acknowledging that there's a lot of water under the bridge and you're not going to hash it out in the 5-minute cutscene that you're going to see. And you just have to, you know, understand that, you know, just by their facial expressions and the small amount of dialogue that they have, that there's this huge, you know, decades long burden that they're carrying between the two of them.
Yep. Yep. I also expected his brother to die. Like the moment he shows up, I'm like, oh, he's going to sacrifice himself for his brother. And he doesn't, which is great. Like, I just love the idea that there's all these other issues and Tommy's got to stick around. And that's just the way the story goes.
Well, and also the fact that Tommy, you know, found a spouse and they seem to be focused on starting a new life. You know, Tommy has embraced the future basically, whereas Joel is still somewhat you know, stuck in his conservative mindset of like, I just don't want things, I don't want to deal with things, or I want things or not to change, you know?
Yeah. I read a lot of like parenthood stuff into the game.
Yeah.
And the stuff with Tommy and his wife is really neat because I think it, I almost feel like there's an underlying resentment against Tommy when this other woman is in the scene, because it's something that Joel doesn't have and can't have really anymore. Mm-hmm. Now that the mother of Sarah was long gone before the game ever took place, because she's clearly not around. Sarah's gone, right? And this whole scene, he's resentful, and there's that brutal scene when he tells Ellie that, like, yeah, you're not my daughter. Yeah. There's all that sort of parental pressure, and Tommy is trying to make the family work, and it's harsh to be looking at that from the perspective of Joel, who doesn't want to replace his daughter because he's still so wounded by that. So, like, just being in there, you could tell, like, there is no life for Joel on that location, even though it seems like of all of the places he's been, this is clearly the healthiest, the safest. There's no life for him there because it represents something that he's just not over. He cannot get over his loss as a father.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to call him self-centered because he makes a decision to help other people a lot, and he's not, you know, he's clearly done some bad things in the past, but it seems like he's somewhat turned over a new leaf, but he's very, you know, he's very introverted in that way.
Yep.
I think it probably makes sense to talk a little bit more about Ellie and the types of decisions that she makes, since the whole game kind of hinges on her decision whether or not to try to, you know, help out humanity and you know, join the Fireflies to help them conduct medical research to see if they can find a cure.
Yeah. So, Ellie.
Oh, man. It would bother me so much when she would start whistling, because I'd be like, shh, there could be a zombie. There could be a zombie anytime. Stop whistling. Like that.
Yeah, it's so cute, though, when she gets it. She's like, I did it, Joel. It's like, aw.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of flavored dialogue, and, like, there's just a lot of good interplay between the two of them. You know, she seems like a teenager, which is pretty funny, you know?
There's also some cool moments when, I think it's scripted, but they talk about, it is scripted, because she's talking about how she got bitten and, like, waiting out with her friends and how all her friends turned and stuff.
Yeah, that was pretty rough.
It's pretty brutal, and it's cool because, like, it reminds you that, she's 14, she's young, but, like, she grew up in this place, right? Yeah. Like, this world is, you know, she's as much of this world as anything else.
Yeah.
More so than Joel, even.
I mean, she never knew any other world, you know? Like, every time you see something from the pre-apocalypse, she kind of asks Joel, what is the point of an ice cream truck? You know, that sort of thing. It's like, she's never known a world. She's never flown in an airplane, you know? Yeah. Like, she's, you know, seeing that character, and then also being able to control, you know, play as the character was important for me anyway, to make it seem like a more fleshed out experience.
Oh, when you actually take control of her later.
Yeah. Which is definitely surprising. I didn't expect that at all. And, you know, like, Joel gets hurt, and then the next scene, you know, the game is divided up into seasons, so it starts in summer, then in you know, winter, you're controlling Ellie, like, you know, from the get-go.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And she does play a little bit differently. Like, she doesn't really have a regular melee attack. Right. The animations for her are different.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. What was I going to say about her? Decisions or something.
There's also, like, a sense that she's protecting Joel, which is, like, a really cool turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Joel's injured at that point, and he's kind of fallen ill.
Yeah, and, like, if Joel hasn't been convinced that Ellie can take care of herself yet, it's, like, those scenes when you know that, like, she's got this.
Yeah. Right?
And even when she's fighting David in that sort of, like, last boss fight, it's something where, like, she wins. She's the one who takes him out. Joel doesn't come up and save the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the one thing that I was really intrigued by is that, you know, you play as Ellie a bunch of different times, but the game doesn't really do much in terms of decision making. Like, it is still a linear thing. Like, there's very little you can actually deviate from, you know, the story of it.
Yeah. You can't befriend the clickers.
You can't.
They just want a hug.
They just don't know the strength of their own bites. You know, I was always kind of wondering what Ellie's intentions were when they made it to the Fireflies, because it becomes quickly clear that it becomes clear very quickly that you know, they can't they can't do anything with the cure unless they kill Ellie, because, you know, the virus and the fungus attaches itself at the brain, so you can't save the person if you want to extract it.
Yep.
And so I was wondering, you know, how much you thought that she knew about that, if at all, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of scenes before Salt Lake where she, mm-hmm. like, asks about, oh, like, are they even going to be here? Is it going to work?
Yeah.
So I get the sense that she feels like she's been through a lot already. Mm-hmm. And especially the scene when she's talking to Joel about her friends who've died. Mm-hmm. And I think she mentioned something like she's just waiting to die.
Yeah.
In a way, right? Because who knows? Maybe she is infected and, like, one day the fungus will take over or whatever. Right. She feels like she's living a life that isn't necessarily deserved and she wants to earn it.
Right.
So I get the sense that, if, you know, maybe she didn't know ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly don't think that the Fireflies asked her permission before they put her unconscious and told her.
Right.
And, like, I don't get the sense that they said, hey, just so you know, we're going to kill you. And she's like, all right, that's cool. Like, I don't think that ever happened.
Yeah.
But I think that she must have known that there was a possibility. Yeah. And I think that if the decision were to come about right at the end of the game, when she asks Joel, like, hey, is everything you said true?
Mm-hmm.
If he had said, no, I lied to you, they were going to chop your brain out and I saved your life, I don't think she necessarily would have gone running back to the Fireflies to find the cure. Right. But I don't think it would have been an easy decision either.
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of the game that we've been talking about for years and years, like the Prince of Persia remake from 2008.
Yep.
Yep. Where, you know...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That popped into my head right when he's taking her away, for sure.
Even the same motion, too, because he's carrying her in his arms away from this decision that theoretically she made to sacrifice herself for the broader good, and he takes that decision away, you know, kind of for, you know, in his judgment, what is the right thing to do? Well, it's kind of the right thing to do for him personally, and you know, she's become a part of his life, so he needs to protect that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a parent now. He's a father. He re-becomes the father figure and takes her under his wing. And in an extreme situation, right, like, your daughter comes first. Yeah. Even if it means, like, you know, pissing her off or lying to her.
Right. That's the saddest thing of the entire game, is that by the time he comes around, the act of becoming a father again, being ready to fully become a father again, means that, you know, in order to fully achieve that, he has to ultimately disappoint the person who he's a father to now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's awesome. It's such a cool story. And I mean, for all we know, that might be a major theme anyway, right? Like, some people would maybe even argue that in real life, right? In a non-post-apocalyptic scenario, your job as a father is to keep your kid alive above all else.
Yeah.
Right? Like, their own desires and agency be damned.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really powerful ending, and one that it came suddenly. Like, I expected you know, again, this being a video game, I expected some huge turret sequence at the end where I was shooting a lot of zombies. You know, like, I really did. Yeah. Like, how shocking was it that when you were Joel and you were controlling Joel and you were going into, you were trying to fight your way into the operating room, which, by the way, I thought that was probably the best sequence of the game. Like, that whole stealth/fighting sequence where you were in the wings.
Yeah. It was so hard, though.
It was very difficult, but I felt like that was at the point where I had gotten good at the game, so I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of how this game was supposed to work. Like, this is...
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That was also... I was the most desperate. Like, I felt so driven.
Yeah.
You know, there was I think the way that I got past that room full of... Like, at one point, all of the guards are there, and they're pointing their guns down the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little you can do. You can't really sneak around them. Like, they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think what I did was... I threw a Molotov, grabbed a guy. Everyone knew I was there.
Yeah.
Killed him, was in a room, threw a smoke grenade, and then opened the door while they couldn't see me, basically, and smoke.
Yeah.
It was such a desperate last dash maneuver.
Yeah. And that's when I thought, you know, it was going to be the end of Joel. You know, like, this is...
Yeah, for sure.
He's going to get her out of here, but he's not getting out of this one, because look at all these guys with machine guns, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, getting to that point, I just expected there to be this huge climax of, like, oh, well, you know, we got to have a big argument about whether or not to operate on Ellie. Well, that argument's going to have to wait because there's a million clickers downstairs, you know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And they don't, like, they never take that bait. They keep it isolated to the character interactions, which is interesting in one sense because, you know, it's about the people, and it's bold in another sense because it's not a big set piece. If this was Uncharted, you would be fighting a mountain of zombies at the end.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure. I mean, even Even the fact that the last person you see Joel kill, right, Marlene,
yeah,
it's done in a flashback cutscene. It's not something that's like, you fight your way to her.
Yeah.
Not the way it goes. It's just like, he does it, and it's out of your hands. And it's great that it's out of your hands, because meanwhile, you're wrestling with the idea about whether or not what you did was just.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was that. The storytelling is just, it's, you know, Uncharted is one thing, because the storytelling, I like the storytelling in Uncharted, because it is another take on the classic pulp story of, you know, Indiana Jones and Flash Gordon and all the other, you know, heroes of the golden age of American cinema, right? But The Last of Us is, it's not, you know, it's not an homage, it's an actual genre piece.
Yeah.
And that made it all the more impressive, because, like, okay, this thing is, like, fully original in a way that Uncharted isn't, just because it's, you know, it's clearly winking that, hey, you know what else is happening alongside Drake, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's like a serious story for once. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, quite enjoyable.
I also just love that the, one, there's no stinger. There's nothing, there's no thing after the credits that's like, right, oh, hints, the rest mm-hmm. of us three or whatever. Yeah. And you get the sense that when the scene ends so abruptly, mm-hmm. like he says no, and she's like, okay, yeah. bam, that's yep. it.
Yeah.
Such a delicious way to end the story.
Yeah. And, you know, one that doesn't indulge in, like, traditional video game, like, everything has to be explained to, you know, an excruciating amount of detail.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
did that part a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, we mined a lot of stuff here. Is there anything else we should talk about, or even, like...
I think one thing I want to say is just, I think that the soundtrack is excellent.
Mm.
I highly recommend...
The soundtrack just, in terms of the effects, or the music, or what?
All of the above. I mean, I think the sound design is really well built in the game, because for the most part, the game's very, very quiet.
Yeah.
Like, even when the music is playing, it's not overbearing, it's not super loud. Mm. You can, I mean, part of this is designed, and I think they failed in this, in the sense of making, like, sound a readable thing, but mm-hmm. part of it is designed to, like, really punctuate when you do hear sound. But I remember one of the first times I fired a gun, it was just seemed so loud, so ugly in comparison to the quietness that the rest of the game had, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're in those action scenes, it's there's not this, you know, rock score going over it or whatever, right? Like, it's really silent.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that. But then also the score by Gustavo Santaolalla, I think his name is. Yeah. He did a bunch of work on, like, 21 Grams and stuff like that. So it's got such cool, like, Western influences, and I really like the score a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, most of the game, other than, like, other than the protracted fights and the repetitive fights, you know, like, it is... like a study in restraint from almost every aspect, except the aspect that is about playing the actual game, which is just like
one of the most important aspects.
Yeah. Like it's, you wonder if this is Naughty Dog's point at which they are like, okay, we can clearly do a dense world with interesting characters. We don't need to support a 15-hour game. Like you wonder if they take a look at something like Journey or something. And it's like, yeah, we could do this, you know?
So you think that maybe this is like a testing ground where they say, you know what, next time we can spend half the budget, we can make something just as impactful, and it doesn't have to carry on the traditions that we've established previously.
I mean, you got to wonder, because I mean, for someone going into this game looking for Uncharted, like, it's going to be quite a bit different.
Yeah.
It's a big departure, and, you know, just maybe, and obviously this game is hugely popular, and so hopefully the reason why it's popular is not because you get to murder 500 people, but it's because, like, it's an interesting story, you know? Like,
that's why I like the game.
It's like you were saying about a testing ground. Like, it would be interesting to see if you were, you know, what if every enemy you killed was actually impactful? And, like, for a while there, they do a pretty good job with enemy models. Like, they don't repeat all that often.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does feel like there's a lot of different types of people in the world, but, you know, that illusion it fades away after a while. So, like, this is kind of, you know, this is a turning point potentially. Like, I could really see them going deeper rather than broader, which is always the question in AAA gaming.
Yeah. I mean, my only concern was just that, you know, when a studio is this large,
mm-hmm.
and they're still relatively large, like, you gotta put... You know, you got to put those guys to work somehow, right?
Right.
I mean, right. So I could imagine, so for example, we could imagine DLC or a sequel or something like that that's bringing a really cool story, but maybe isn't bloated with as much gameplay. But then what are you going to do with everyone on your team who are the, you know, the systems designers and the gameplay designers?
I don't know. That's the kind of moral dilemma that reminds me of the actual story itself. I don't want to be responsible for letting them know that they can eat or not.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Well, I think, you know, we dug pretty deep into this, but, you know, it's pretty... People are talking about this game quite a bit, so we should open it up to other folks. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address if you want to get in touch.
And, of course, ExperiencePoints.net is our website. There's still meat on these bones, so we can talk about... It's kind of actually kind of neat. It's another post-apocalyptic world. Zombies, but still pretty good, right? I thought zombies were dead.
Oh, zombies are undead.
Well, they're undead, excuse me.
Yeah, it's be interesting to hear what everyone has to say. And yeah, until next time, everyone, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be talking to you next week.
So long. Every time we disagree, there's a place to go to.